Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Rob Walker. Rob is the human resource columnist for lifehacker.com and a longtime contributor to the New York Times and many other publications. He's on the Faculty of Products of Design graduate program at the School of Visual Arts. And his new book from Knopf is The Art of Noticing, 131 Ways to Spark Creativity, Find Inspiration, and Discover Joy in the Everyday. Hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm great, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you join us. We're talking about some cool tools, and I know you have some great stuff to suggest to us.
I'm excited to be here, Kevin.
So tell us about your first one, Rob. You tell me what it's called. I can't pronounce the word.
Well, you know, I don't actually know how it's pronounced. Bianfeng, I guess. It's a brand of notebook, and it's a notebook that I've used for a long time. And I'm a little cautious about raising a notebook because I know that people have such strong opinions about notebooks. Mm-hmm. But what I like about, there's two things I like about it. One is that just the very basic, I get the 8.5 by 5.5 size, the sort of small size. There's a larger size. And it's half ruled and half blank. So each page at the bottom half is ruled and the top half is blank. And I like that to be able to either write things or sort of sketch things or whatever. And that's what drew me to these notebooks in the beginning. And I've been using them, I realize now, since college, mm-hmm. Where my friend Brett Howery, if he's still out there, shout out to Brett Howery. He had them and I was jealous and started buying them too. It was a different design then, they were better in those days. But this is actually the other thing I like about these notebooks is that they're not too precious. They're actually kind of cheap. And I've always had I went through a phase of I got a Moleskine, but I never felt like I had anything worth saying to it. Yeah, to ruin this problem, beautiful object. Do other people have that problem? Anyway.
Oh, so, yeah, I totally do.
And then I like Field Notes. Have you ever seen those notebooks? Those are really cool.
Sure.
But they're small. They're a little small, so you go through them a little too quickly, and then I'm always losing them and stuff. So
yeah.
So for someone who's looking for kind of a midpoint thing, it's a neat notebook. It's spiral bound, but it's not too precious. It's not like this object that you feel like you're spoiling every time you write down some dumb observation.
So with this spiral bound, it's kind of midsize. Do you carry it, and where do you carry it? Does it fit into a pocket, or do you have to?
It doesn't
put it in
fit into a pocket. It fits into. I have a sort of a shoulder bag that it fits neatly into without taking up too much space. That's the main thing that I carry in. So I've never been a carry them everywhere kind of person. There's only a certain situation. If I'm traveling, then I'll have the notebook. Otherwise, the truth is I'm never going anywhere. I'm just sitting in my room. So I can just leave it on my desk.
And so they're about $5, $5.5.
If you buy them online, you get it for $5 or $6 each. Or if you buy a bunch, they think they're even cheaper.
Okay.
And at this point, I haven't seen one in a store in a while. But you used to be able to get them at art supply kind of stores. I guess I haven't been in one of those kind of stores in a while. So I just buy them online. And I've got a big stack of them now. And they're reliable.
Okay. The spiral bound. Okay, great. And do you ever rip pages out, or do you... The spiral bound is just so that they can lay flat. Is that
the idea? I do. I mean, on the sort of they're not that precious tip, I will rip a page. If I just need to, here's my phone number, just write it down and rip it on hand to somebody. I don't feel bad about that. I've ruined it or anything. Right. And you fold them up, whatever. The one on my desk had, I put sticky tabs in them and things like that.
Okay, so I have a question. When you fill up the notebook, what do you do with it?
I set it off to the side. Mm-hmm. It's a good question because about a year ago, I did go through a bunch of them. Like I put them in a box and I went through a bunch of them, and that was pretty interesting. And I realized, you know, oh, all these little ideas that I had that I didn't follow through on, I'm going to follow through on them now. And then I just didn't follow through on them again. So I had that experience.
Yeah, that's funny.
One of the weird things that happens to me is I go back and I find out that an idea that I just had yesterday, I actually had five years ago.
Yes,
most depressing thing. And it's also kind of... It's also kind of comforting too. It's
like, it is kind of comforting. It's like when you realize that song, like, oh, I discovered this great new song, and then you realize, oh, I already have that, but I gave it 5 stars. So I am who I am. I'm really true to myself.
Yeah, that just reminds me. Once I was reading, I was at a bookstore, and there was a book about how to make cigar box guitars, and so I opened it up and I started reading the foreword to it. And I'm like, this guy really knows what he's talking about. This is like really cool. I get to the end. I wrote it. Completely forgot. Yeah.
Wow. You should support that guy. Go buy his stuff.
Yeah, right.
Support him on Patreon.
So, moving on, tell us about your next one, about a toggle light switch.
Yeah. Okay. So this is called SwitchMate. And have you ever encountered this before? It's ostensibly a smart home product, mm-hmm. but what it really is it's kind of like a little box that has magnets in it that you can put over like just a standard toggle switch. Mm-hmm. And it has this
over, I mean, you don't wire it in. It's just
it's
magnetically
on
sticking onto it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's kind of, it actually reminds me a little bit, Mark, of the thing you're obsessed with, those useless machine, where it just like clunk.
Right.
And that's all it does. It just goes clunk up and clunk down and flicks the switch. So it's kind of like a dumb smart home product, but it happens to be, and you do hook it up to an app to put it on a timer. Hmm. And that's why it's perfect for me, because we happen to have these front lights that are on a standard toggle switch. And I was always forgetting to turn them on at night or turn them off. And then like I'd leave them on till noon or something, because I would just forget. And I didn't want to go through the whole rigmarole of like rigging up, like getting an electrician. Like I didn't want a problem. And I randomly discovered this thing, and I thought that's sort of looks perfect. And it's $25, which is kind of a lot for something that's so silly. But
I'm trying to gather. So this is a little cover that goes over your normal standard toggle switch on a wall.
Yeah.
And the idea is that this is a smart version that can be controlled by something or other.
Well, it's so all that is, there's a mechanism inside that literally just flips the switch, that just physically like a thing moves up or down. Clunk.
It's a wireless clunk. Finger.
Yeah. And right. So the triggering of the movement is done wirelessly. Yeah.
Right, right. Okay, so it's a way to turn a wall switch into wireless without having to do any wiring.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So you don't have to replace the switch. You just cover this. You just go over the top of it.
Yeah.
With this non-invasive.
Yeah.
Cover, which then you can control with a phone, basically,
app on the phone. Okay. An app.
This is exactly what I need, because I bought a two pack of these little Wi-Fi switches to control lights in the front yard and backyard of my house. The front yard had what I needed, which is a neutral wire. It needs a neutral wire, and so I installed it. It was pretty. It turns on at sunset, turns off at sun. It's.
Right.
And then the other
Price.
It only had a ground wire, not a neutral. There's a difference between those. And so it wasn't working. Oh. And so I just flipped the switch on off at night. But this is exactly what I need. I don't need to worry about the wiring.
Well, so the cautionary note for you and listeners is that you have to look at your... So first of all, it only works for the standard toggle switch, although I believe they also make them for the
rockers.
Rocker,
I think they
switch.
Have a rocker version. Yeah.
But like if you have a dimmer, you're totally out of luck. And then the other thing is sometimes switches are built in a way where they're too close together for this thing to like
if there's a multi one.
Yeah. So that gets a little tricky. Yeah. So you want to buy it from someone where you can return it if it just doesn't fit.
Right. Right. And so there's a dedicated app. You have to invoke the app to
It's called SwitchMate.
And does it presumably the app can control more than one switch independently, or do you have to?
Yeah, it agreed. Presumably, because I've only got the one, but the way it's set up, when you open it, you pick, you know, you choose, you give it a name, and like, so you could do backyard and whatever.
So this is sort of like your dumb smart house.
It's totally a dumb smart home product. It's the dumbest smart home product.
And does the app know, like, can you enter your location coordinates, your latitude and longitude?
It doesn't.
The other one is great because it adjusts throughout the year and turns on as soon as it's dusk.
No, that would be great. I would love it if it were like 10% smarter, but I was so happy with it that I can't really complain. And in some ways, we have a Ring doorbell. Yeah. And I'm not happy with how much smarter that keeps getting. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they keep adding new features, quote unquote, where I now get alerts about things in my neighborhood and stuff that I don't want to know about.
Yeah, dog barking or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Or just like someone in the neighborhood's porch. Here's footage of a guy rummaging on our porch. And like, I don't want to know that.
I'm not getting that information. I wonder why. I didn't sign up for anything. Maybe that's why.
Well, I think, I don't know, but it's some kind of neighborhood. I think it's what they're emphasizing in their business now is this sort of neighborhood watch element. I didn't sign up for it either, but it's one of those things where I'm, you know, at some point I got to look at the preferences and figure out how this happened and make it go away.
But well, that's a great one. So what's another cool tool for us?
Okay. The next one I'm going to talk about is that podcast. Which is In Our Time from BBC Four, I guess. Do either of you guys know this show?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I've been a long time.
So you're a fan.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I'll tell you about it anyway. Hopefully some of your listeners won't know about it. But I'm a huge fan. I've been listening to it for some years now, but it's the host name, I guess, is Melvin Bragg, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The premise is that every week he gets in three academics to talk briskly for an hour through one topic, which can be anything from, they just did Frankenstein recently. They did Ulysses Grant. I like the history ones a bit. So Incas. Frederick Douglass they did recently, and it's kind of like, I was thinking of it, it's sort of like those great courses things, except it's all just boiled down to 1 hour, you know, and it's just lightning fast. And I'd be curious what you guys have to say about this, since you're listeners to it. I've over the years become very interested in trying to figure out what Melvin thinks of the guests. Because sometimes he seems really annoyed with them, like they're not moving fast enough, or they're not, he kind of tangles with them. But then sometimes he seems really impressed. Uh-huh. And then they have the little thing now on the good thing about the podcast is they have the little 5 minutes after they go off the air or whatever. Like, let's talk a little bit more, which I find incredibly charming. I really love that show.
So besides the history, he does have a science component. So there'll be some of gravity waves or the electron.
Right. Or Venus they did not long ago.
And his chief role, which is really brilliant, is he kind of forces them to go through this in kind of a logical manner so they're just not rambling.
Yes.
They have notes they gave him, and he'll kind of structure something. In history, he'll go through chronologically, and he'll ask the questions and keep it moving and keep them focused, which is where he sometimes gets a little grumpy.
Yes.
But it does work for the listener because he will get through the whole thing, as you say, very, very briskly. The other cool thing that is maybe takes a while to notice, but he has three guests and they're all dons, you know, in Oxford or somewhere, but almost invariably two of them are women.
That's true.
There are always two women, which is obviously has to be a very deliberate practice of his, which is really great. And I also find that the more obscure and esoteric and weird the topic is, the better.
It's
where you take the most obscure thing and then you go really, really deep, and it's always fascinating.
I am fascinated by what kind of prep work must go. Like, I don't know how they find that, because they do a pretty good job of finding people who, because that's not necessarily the job of an academic, is to, you know, to be able to talk briskly to a general audience, you know. And they always seem to have, you know, every once in a while there's someone who's a bit of a clunker, but they, because he moves it along so well, and they must prep these people or audition them or something. It's quite impressive.
It is. And it's, I think it's weekly, and all the, you know, the back archives are all available. Yeah. I highly recommend it. It's actually only 45 minutes. And so, maybe in the extra additional 5 minutes with the podcast now, right. But it's less than an hour. And, over the years, they have quite a backlist, which I also highly recommend.
Yeah. And yeah. Right now, I think they're on their summer break, but even then, they're still putting stuff up every week. And mm-hmm. the archival stuff is so good that it's almost a good time to start listening to it when they're doing kind of reruns.
I mean, it's like one of the first podcasts, I think. It's been around forever. Like, I would say like close to 20 years.
Well, it's been a radio show forever. Right. And I think they were among the first to kind of realize that they could turn the radio show into a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so until very recently, there was no ads whatsoever. It was BBC kind of, you know, generosity, but they have now ads on the non-UK versions of the.
I like the other BBC one that I like is Seriously. Do you ever listen to that?
I haven't. Tell me about that one.
That one is kind of a documentary. They're like 30-minute documentaries on any given subject. They did a kind of a cool one about, it was kind of a mini series about this guy who was like the minister of information for Putin and all of his manipulative ways. I can't remember his name now. But it's, you know, they'll skip around different subjects. They're independent documentary producers. And it's just an anthology type show.
So it's an audio documentary.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Called Seriously.
Seriously, yeah.
That's a great name.
And they're usually like half an hour long. So they're good. Those kind of bite-sized things. But and they'll pick up stuff from around the world. There'll be stuff that was produced for them, but I think it's like kind of a platform for audio producers who are getting a break, you know.
Mm-hmm. This is maybe worth of a longer recommendations, but out of England, the people who put out the browser now put out something called a Listener, which is a daily review of podcast episodes.
Huh.
Great podcast.
Podcast
episodes. Yeah, which is a great idea. Yeah. Which is not, you don't have to subscribe to the whole thing, but this particular podcast episode was really great. You should listen to it.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, because I don't know about you. I've become a little gun shy about subscribing to podcasts because I'm already behind enough.
Right.
But if you just give me one episode to check out.
Right. And that's called The Listener.
We'll check that out.
So tell us about your recent projects and your books and what you're up to.
You want me to do my last cool tool?
We forgot one. I'm sorry.
I skipped the last one. I'm putting them in different order than I suggested.
All right. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Because I want to end with this dumb thing that I love so much called Decibel X, which is just, it's very simple. There's not much to talk about, but it's an app that just, you know, you open it up and it tells you what the decibel reading is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's it. Like, that's the whole story.
That's cool.
But it is like, I get such pleasure out of it. And it's kind of like junior high school dork pleasure of just like, I wonder what the decibel level is in here. And there's one tab that you can poke on that'll say like analogous to, it's like, it's a quiet room or it's a noisy street or whatever.
Have you been able to learn to estimate it pretty closely yourself by now?
No, not really. I mean, you know, very roughly. Like I kind of mostly I'm interested in how quiet it is. So I'm pretty good at like being, I bet it's under 50 or whatever, you know. So but like I said, I have no point to this. But I find that it's one of the apps that I check the most frequently. Like if I looked at those statistic things, I bet I open it as much as I open Instagram.
I would use it to complain in restaurants. I would go up and say, look, it is 85 decibels in here.
You could totally do that.
Yeah. Restaurants. Yeah.
But anyway, it's a geeky one, but it's free. Decibel X, I use it on iPhone. I assume there's an Android version.
And do you have any sense of like how accurate it is?
I have total faith in technology.
you believe the advertising. Okay.
No, I've never cross-checked it. I don't know. It's answers seem intuitively right in the sense of like, yeah, it is kind of like it's loud in here now. So it's in the red zone or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to fact check it.
It sounds well, useful.
No, it's really, really handy. And there are different, it's just one decibel X. Okay. And they call it a noise meter, which I guess is what a decibel meter is.
Yeah. And it just gives you, there's a little dot, you know, on the main interface page, there's a little dial, and then there's the number showing digitally at the bottom. And I guess, I don't know what other functions you can do with it.
And looking at this, it looks like it runs on iOS.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I use. I would guess there's an Android version, but I don't know.
Doesn't seem to say, but well, it's in the App Store, so who knows? Yeah. Okay. Well, that's really cool. I'm going to load that because I do like to complain about the noise.
Yeah, it is like I can imagine use cases that would actually be use cases, but I just use it as anything. Yeah,
well, for me, I was using a blower, and I realized after that my ears felt fuzzy for a couple of hours after. So it would be nice to see how loud that blower is.
Huh.
And also an angle grinder I was using to cut some pipe. And well, I after I cut a couple of pieces of pipe, I thought, you know what, I should put some earplugs on. And so I did, but it was a bit too late. So I'm going to check the sound out, the volume on those things.
Yeah. Remind me of what kind of, what's normal? What's the red?
Is when it gets to like, looks like about 100.
Okay. That's considered,
90, harmful. Like, looks like around 90 to 100. Let's look at the,
It's also here. Like a matter of says, duration, right? I mean, it's like you can get a short-term exposure to something and it's just like,
sure.
It's consistent.
Right. Yeah. And this isn't going to sort of tell you, it's just going to tell you what's happening right at that moment. So like Subway is 100, jets, like that's 140, 150 or something like that. Jet engine. But it'd be cool to check it out on a plane, actually. I've never done that.
Yeah. But I think it does graph things. I think you can make a graph, right?
Yeah. It does look like you can do that.
Okay. Yeah. Which would be useful.
Yeah. Now some of this, they're always trying to, I get these alerts saying like, hey, do you want to get the pro version? So I don't know what that does, but I don't want the pro version.
Okay.
I want the amateur version. Decided amateur on this matter.
Yes. All right. Well, okay. So now we have the four. Okay. Thank you for reminding me of the last one.
We didn't want to leave that out.
No, I'm going to load that right away. As soon as we get off, I'm going to load it up.
Save the best for last.
So, Rob, one of the things we've been talking about for a while is, as you've been working on it, is this really great book. It's a short book that you wrote called The Art of Noticing. And it's kind of like prompts or like a actual service-oriented book that tells you how to benefit from being more observant.
So here's how I've described it to people. It's like, and this is true, that it sort of the project started out as, you know, a kind of more standard book that would have been 90%. Here's the problem with how everyone wants your attention and we're all in this time of distraction and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then 10% of like, and here's some fun things you can do to fight back. And then I realized like all I cared about was that last 10%. I was having a really good time doing that. And so I flipped it. So it starts out as 10%. It's like, hey, here's the problem. You kind of already know the problem. Like you don't really need, in my opinion, you don't really need to spend a whole lot of time convincing people that they feel distracted.
Yeah.
So we blow past that and get to like, it's like walk through an unfamiliar part of town or meet a friend pick a halfway point and meet a friend there, you know, on a map, like pick a halfway point on a map and just meet there or follow the, like go to the quietest place you can find or eat in a restaurant that looks really dubious, all stuff like that, you know, that are meant to be. And it kind of moves from some of them are, it starts out visually oriented. Then the second section is trying to get you out of just, because that's what we think of when we think of noticing, is we think of the visual So there's sort of scavenger huntish things. Then it gets into trying to get into your other senses and making a sound map and trying to pay attention to textures and things like this. Then it moves into kind of exploring the world. And by that, I mean, like people always ask about favorites or ones that I actually do. And one that I actually do a lot is the big box archaeologist. If I have to go to Walmart or something, I give myself a mission, like what's the weirdest thing on sale at Walmart today? And it turns it into a game. So a lot of them are gamification things. And last time I went to Walmart, it was Pop-Tarts cereal. Did you know that
that's a thing? No.
Wow.
Yuck.
Yeah. Well, my favorite place to play that is at Randy 99 Ranch. Which, for the people who aren't in the West Coast, this is the kind of mega oriental grocery supermarket. Where they've got the Pan Asian thing, where they've got the imports from Thailand, Japan, the Philippines, China. And just the packaging alone is a, you know, is a mind grenade and eye candy. All the weird stuff that you haven't encountered that you have no idea what it is or that people eat it. Yeah. Or maybe it's not even being eaten. It could be something else.
The produce section even is like
even the produce section. But I love the packaging goods because they're just of an alien species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I think that that's really fun. But it's also fun in a place like Walmart that you think of as just being like, oh, banal America, whatever. And that's where your senses kind of go dead. And all you're trying to do is think of how do I get out of here? And I don't know how often you even go to Walmart, but I do have to go from time to time. And it seems like every time I have to go, I need three things and they're in three different corners. So I have to walk the entire 5-acre expanse of this place.
Sure. Where did most of these suggestions, 130 of them, come from? Or were you soliciting them from people? Were they ones you uncovered from your research, or were ones that you just sort of dreamed up about, well, this would be really cool to do? Where are they coming from?
So it started with me dreaming them up, and kind of it related to, I teach this class at the School of Visual Arts, a short class every year called Point of View. And I have a big thing about wanting the students to notice things that other people overlooked, because I think this is really an important, like this, if there's one message about that sort of attention economy stuff, is that I feel that sometimes when you're dealing with students, they will feel that, well, if I'm noticing this thing, but no one else is talking about it, it's not like trending, then I guess it must not be very important, you know? And I think that's a disastrous conclusion. Like, it's really important that you zone in on, like, the stuff that you notice that no one else noticed is the most important thing, right? So a lot of this came out of the class. And then I had an assignment that I would make the students do, which was just practice paying attention. That was the whole assignment. They had a week to come up with some way of resolving that challenge. So some of the ideas in the book came directly from that. And then I started asking people just various people like Paul Antonelli at MoMA and Seth Godin and Dan Ariely and just various people that I knew one way or another for their ideas and stole those with credit. And so it became a mash of those things. And then some were taken from the stuff I'd read. There's some Duchamp stuff about the infra-thin, which is his idea about sort of stuff that's outside the five senses, like the warmth of a chair that's just been vacated. That's an example of the infra-thin. Mm-hmm. So one of the assignments is hunt for the infra-thin, you know, be on the alert for the infra-thin. So stuff like that.
Wow.
So that's it's a variety of things. And it's for people, it's definitely good for students, but it's also good, I think, for anybody who is just looking for some creative ways to break out of the kind of rut without being anti, like I'm not into the whole, oh, do a digital detox and take a month off from, like, I don't think that's really realistic for most people. This is more scalable stuff that you can work into your life. And it's more about adding something to your life as opposed to denying something.
Yeah, right. One of the best noticers that I recently realized were working professionally were comedians.
Oh, yeah.
comedians are always noticing things that nobody else seems to notice, or they find it really important or and then funny.
I mentioned in this that Seinfeld, that's his whole career. Like,
right, exactly.
Literally, did you ever notice? You
know? Did you ever notice, right.
and George Carlin was an amazing, I mean, so, and they're doing exactly the kind of noticing where it's stuff that's, that we've all seen before without really
not registering,
noticing
yeah.
it,
noticing it. Yeah. I think for some reason, someone brought up to me recently, an old Seinfeld bit. They don't really have this anymore, but remember when they had on airplanes where you would throw away your razor? They'd have the little deposit your razor here.
Uh-huh.
He was like, who's doing all this shaving on airplanes that you need to change razors mid-flight? Is it the Wolfman?
Just recently, I think on his YouTube series, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, there was a bit about the fact that the word company, we're having company, which was what I grew up with.
Yeah.
My mom would talk about company, that we don't use that word anymore. It's like, it's just completely vaporized. Nobody talks about companies coming over.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I hadn't noticed it either, but it's absolutely true. We just stopped using that word for company. Like, when was the last time you said, a company's coming over?
Right. It's
like, yeah.
And it's a strange word too. Company.
It is an odd choice. That's where I thought you were going to go with this. Is like, why company? Yeah. What is that supposed to?
Yeah.
Companion.
You're being accompanied.
Like, yeah.
Companion. But so noticing sounds wonderful. The name of the book again is what?
It's The Art of Noticing.
The Art of Noticing.
And it has a very long subtitle. It's 131 ways to spark creativity, find inspiration, discover joy in the everyday.
And 131, you just ran out at 131?
Oh, yeah. No. So there's people always ask about this. I was going to do 100, and then my editor and I talked, and I had 170 or something of them, and we're cutting them back. And I decided to go for the Cosmopolitan magazine theory. You know how they would always have like, it seemed like it was always a prime number, like 167 ways to orgasm and whatever. Like, and something about the specificity of it made it seem more credible to me. Like, these must be the 167 ways. So my one, I decided I wanted it to be a prime number, and that was, and we ended up at 131.
Cool.
Okay.
Cool.
Wow.
These are the 131 ways.
Yeah, exactly. There are no more.
This is it.
Well, Rob, this has been a blast talking to you. Really enjoyable. And
oh, it's been fun. I appreciate being a company in your your home.
And they're great suggestions. Really, really good suggestions.
I'm glad to hear it.
I can't wait to get that switchy. That's exactly what I needed, was that SwitchMate toggle light switch.
Well, let me know if it works out.
It solves the problem.
Let me know if it works out.
I was actually thinking of calling the electrician and saying, could you please pull a neutral wire? That would have cost a lot of money. This is like...
Yeah.
This is it.
Yeah. Well, I hope it works for you.
This is it.
I hope it works for you. And I should have said at the top, I am a big, legitimate fan of this show and have purchased many items.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Well, thank you.
So I'm glad that this stuff that I suggested wasn't too embarrassing. I was really nervous about it.
No, it's perfect stuff.
And you, just as a teaser, you had some backup tools. So we'll save those for another time. We'll have you back on.
Okay.
And we can go through those.
Okay. Okay. That sounds good. Anytime.
Alrighty.